So this morning, as we prepare for Parashas Vayishlach, I wanted to share an idea that may be the most controversial premise that I've ever shared, but I wouldn't share it if Chazal didn't say it.
Fair enough. Good source.
The word of introduction, it's important to keep in mind, that is the predominant view in Chazal, is that Esav is the manifestation, or perhaps even the embodiment, of evil in the world. Esav has a descendant, his name is Amalek, which we categorize as the embodiment and manifestation of evil. We have to destroy it completely. Esav has the representation in Chazal of the chazir, the pig, which cannot be eaten, meaning it cannot be redeemed. Esav sone es Yaakov. I understand that on some level, in one perspective of Chazal, this is absolutely true, and it's said in a very, it's formulated in many different ways, but in a very strong, strident type of way. It's not something that's equivocal. And what we're going to say this morning does not diminish or question that in any shape or form. On the other hand, what I'd like to share with you this morning is a series of statements in Chazal that present a potential for an alternative to that picture. Now, that alternative does not mean that the first is not true. Very often in Midrashim, you have multiple truths that reflect different perspectives. So this perspective does not negate in any way that other primary perspective that appears in Chazal, but it adds a certain nuance that maybe we didn't think about before. So with that introduction, I want to begin actually with a Medrash Tanchuma, the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, Yelamdenu Rabbeinu, our rabbis should teach us, Hahorig es hanefesh vishgaga, a person who murders, not accidentally, but negligently, right? Not an accident would be an onus. This is bishogig, means he wasn't adequately careful. Leheichon hayagole, where would he seek refuge? To where would he be exiled? Kach shanu rabosenu. This is what our rabbis learned. Ha-horeg nefesh bishgaga gole la'ari miklat. A person who murders, not intentionally but negligently, he is exiled to the city of refuge. L'shalosh ha'arim shebe'ivar ha'yardin, to the three in the other side of the Jordan. V'shalosh shebe'eretz Yisrael, and three in the land of Israel. V'yakov avinu gole l'charon. And Yaakov Avinu was exiled to Charan, Boreach Benafsho, running for his life, with his life, Vinisyare, and he feared, Shelo Yarogo Soharasha Esav Achiv, that his brother, the wicked, shouldn't kill him. So what happened? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw, says the Medrash, that he was in such a difficult circumstance, that he was in such dire straits, God appeared to him on the way. Can I ask you a question? Why is Yaakov Avinu here being presented as
a killer, b'shogeg?
A rotzeach b'shogeg. Ma pitom? What did Yaakov Avinu do that could precipitate his departure as an exilee? What are you talking about? His father said, go find a wife in Haran. So on those grounds, he went to Haran. His mother said she knew that Esav was going after him. She said, go away from Esav. He didn't kill anyone. Oh, so the bracha. So the question is, wait a second. Ma pitom that he should be considered after the maisa of the brachos, of the blessings, which through some subterfuge he procured from Yitzchak, why should he be considered like a rotzeach b'shogeg? So this is issue number one. Let's put that on the back burner. We're going to come back to it. Issue number two is an incredible medrash in the similar vein that appears in the Medrash Eicha, the Medrash in Esther. It also appears a similar formulation of it back in Parshas Toldos, page 2. It Says the Medrash, Mordechai heard that Haman had conspired with Achashverosh to kill all of the Jews. Vayizak ze'aka gdola umara. And he screamed a great and bitter scream. Says the Medrash, Ve'hecha nifralo b'shushan shenemar, Vayizak ze'aka gdola umara. Amar Rabbi Chanin, Man de Amar kutchebrichu vatran hu, Yisvatrun b'nei ma'ohi. Anyone who claims that the Rabbono Shel Olam is a vatran. What is a vatran?
He doesn't
give up on something.
Exactly.
What is it?
Give up on something. Gives up. You know, it's not mine, it's yours. Or, I won't start up with you.
Yeah? That he does, what were we going to say?
I was going to say that he doesn't give you what you deserve.
Right? Exactly.
Any good deed or gets rewarded every bad deed gets punished.
Mm-hmm. There's a Yiddish expression. The Yiddishism is to fagin someone.
Oh. Okay.
So what is that? How would you translate that in English?
It's begrudge.
To fagin means to not begrudge someone.
Right.
I don't care. Don't worry about it. Anybody who says that the Rabbono Shel Olam fagins is totally wrong. Don't think that the Rabbono Shel Olam says, I don't care. It's not true at all. Now, generally, we assume that the midah of vatranos, of farginin, is a very good midah. It's a beautiful midah. That's what the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah. Mavral midosav, mavirin lo kol pshav. If we are vatranim, so to speak, the Gemara there specifically does not use the word vatran, but I'm using it in a colloquial sense, in a Yiddish sense, in a Musar sense. If we say, it's okay, you hurt my feelings, no problem, I'm able to move on, so then the Rabbono Shel Olam will say, kivyachol, himavir lo kol pshav, but it's not vatranos in the technical sense, because the Rabbono Shel Olam is never mevater. Never. How do you know? Elamarich ruche, he waits patiently, Vigove delay, and ultimately he'll take payment. It may take time, and for the Rabbono Shel Olam, a long time could mean millennia. Teda, you should know, Shahare Zaaka Achaz Hizik Yaakov LaEsav. Yaakov caused Esav to scream one scream. Dichsiv, as it says in the pasuk, Vayitzak Zaaka Gedola Umara. Ouch. Yaakov Avinu swipes the blessings from Esav, so he screams. Later on, many, many generations later, the Jewish people are faced with annihilation. And Chazal link it, that Zaaka, to this Zaaka. It's a pretty powerful medrash. What is that medrash trying to tell us with this linkage? And finally, there's a third medrash that appears in this week's parsha that brings us more directly to our topic. Says the pasuk, "Vayakom ba'laylahu." He got up that night. Vayikach. I'm on the bottom of the right hand column in Tes. This is in Ayin Vav Tes. As Shetei Nashav, as Shetei Shavchosav, and how many children did he bring with him?
11.
How many children did he have?
12. Mm. 13.
At that point, he had 12.
He had Akal Dina, was the 12th, right.
Dina was 12, Binyam was not yet born.
Right.
Says the Medrash, V'dina Heichan Haisa. Heichan he, where is she? I don't know where she is, because he has 11 children. Not true, he has 12. So the Medrash says, Nesana B'teva. He put her in a box, v'no'al b'faneha, and he locked the box. Omar, he said, Harasha hazeh, this wicked individual, eino rama he. He has a high eye. I don't know how to even translate that. It means my mother used to say, I don't want to say that she said this about me, but she used to say, when I would eat at the dinner table, she would say, you have big eyes. Right? What does that mean, you have big eyes?
You're taking too much.
Exactly. Greise Egen, that's right. So that's what he's saying about, that's, it's amazing, by the way, how you see how so many expressions, someone told me this in the name of Rav Soloveitchik about many Yiddishisms. He said that those Yiddishisms have a certain measure of value because they're rooted in Mesorah, in many Gemaras, in Midrashim. It's amazing how you see how the culture of Torah just kind of, it seeps in even to the vernacular. Anyway, so he says he has big eyes, shelo yitla einav v'yira osa, that he shouldn't hang his eyes and see her, v'yikach osa mimeni, and take her from me. So what would you say? Is that a good move or not a good move on Yaakov Avinu's part?
You would think it was a good move.
Yeah.
Right, that's what you would think.
Yeah.
I think it was a great move. I know what you're going to say on this. Okay, let's go on.
Let's go on. Let's play this story out to the end.
Okay.
Rav Huna b'shem Rav Abba Kohen Bartle Amar. Rav Huna said in the name of Rav Abba Kohen Bartle, something unbelievable. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God said to him, and it's invoking a pasuk in Iyav, Lamas me're'ehu chased. You manata me'reyacha chased. You have removed, you have withheld from your friend a kindness. Manata chazdecha min achuch. You have removed a kindness from your brother. De'ilu insaves legavra lo zinsa. Had Dina been married, she would have never been violated. Lo, skipping the parentheses for a second. Lo vikashta lahasiya lemahul. You didn't want to marry her off to Esav, who is at least circumcised. Harehi nises l'orel. Guess what? She's going to end up marrying, who is she taken by?
Shechem.
The orel, the uncircumcised guy. Lo vikashta lahasiya derech heter. You didn't seek to marry her in the manner of permitted. Hari Hini says Derech Isser. So guess what? She's going to end up living with him in an improper manner. Hadau Dechziv, and that's what it says in the immediately subsequent Parsha. After they settle, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. After that, what happens next? Vateitze Dina Baslaya. So Dina is attacked. So that's a very, very intense and perhaps even a controversial statement in Chazal. It pins the blame on the episode of Dina on Yaakov, that he didn't try to arrange a shidduch between his daughter Dina and his brother Esav.
If he wasn't good enough for her mother, he was not good enough for her.
Oh, so that's the question. What are you talking about? Why should she have been good enough for Dina? Ah, that's exactly the question. So, shockingly, there is this parenthesis that we skipped. Now, the parenthesis reads, Nusach Acharina, Dinesevas Le'iov Lav Giyarte. So, it's very peculiar. It's hard to understand what that medrash means. It means literally that you married to Iov. She did not convert him, Bitmia, as a wonder. So thanks to the footnotes here on the bottom, they give you a cross-reference to a Yalkut Shimoni in Iov, which, ta-da, is on the next page. And I blew it up, so it would be much better, easier to read. You see where I put the arrow? Has a similar medrash, similar line of description of what happened with Dina, and it says, Ilu Haisa L'Esav, if she had married Esav, Haisa Megayeres Oso, she would have had the ability to influence him and to convert him. Kishem Shagira L'Eov, just as she converted Eov. So I must tell you, Eov, Job. That's it. I never knew this until this week when I was working on this presentation. I never heard of this. According to this medrash that you're looking at, Dina, the daughter of Yaakov, married Eov and converted him. convinced him to join the Jewish people. Wow. So this medrash is pella otzum, amazing. First of all, why is it a pella? Because we don't know when Eov lived. We don't know if Eov ever lived. The Gemara says in Bava Basra, maybe Eov was just a figure to demonstrate a lesson, but that actually, historically, there never was such
a
man.
There was no Job.
There was no man like that. Even if he was, the Medrash has multiple different opinions as to when he lived. Maybe he lived in the days of Avram, maybe he lived in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe he interacted with Paro. Lots of different options. So this Medrash is taking a stand and says that there was a man, his name was Eov, he married the daughter of Yaakov and converted. Wow.
Could have been another Eov.
Could have been another Eov, but that's not what it sounds like from this story. So what is going on over here? So I think what we're seeing, and the way to perhaps put all of these things together, is that maybe the picture from this standpoint of Esav that develops is not the way we would ordinarily exclusively view Esav. And we can frame that based on a major teaching of Chassidus that appears, I got it through in English here, in the collection from the great Rav Arya Kaplan. He has like a likut, you could say in English, of different ideas. So in his section here, on good and evil, he quotes from the holy Baal Shem Tov, and he says the following. One might wonder, you see I'm on the left-hand column? One might wonder, since at the end of the count of creation, the Torah states, and God saw that all he had made, and behold, it was very good. Throughout the story of creation, it is also written many times, it was good. In the book of Devarim, however, it is written, behold, I have set before you life and good, and death and evil. This would tend to indicate that evil also comes from God. The question then arises, from where did evil originate? Meaning, if it only said in the original Bria that there was Tov, it didn't say anything about Ra, now all of a sudden there is, well, where did it come from? But the truth is that evil is also good. It is merely the lowest level of good. This is indicated in the Zohar, where the term to evil, which means milara, is used to indicate the downward direction. So ra, milara, means to go down. So evil is at the lowest point, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have a makom, doesn't have a place. Therefore, when it is used for good, evil also becomes good. When it is involved in sin, however, then it becomes true evil. This is very much like a broom. When a broom is used to sweep the dirt out of a house, it is somewhat good. Even though it is on the lowest level, it is still serving a good purpose. But when this broom is used to beat a child who has done wrong, then it becomes truly evil. That is the mashal of the Baal Shem Tov. If this is true, then perhaps we can understand what Chazal is saying. You're right. If you view Esav as irredeemable evil, as pure and unadulterated evil, so then maybe there's nothing to talk about. But maybe Esav is not pure, unredeemable evil. Maybe there's also some potential. Why did Yitzchak Avinu offer Esav a bracha? So this is a very famous, perhaps the most famous question in the whole life of Yitzchak Avinu. How was he duped? Is that really possible that he was duped into thinking that Esav was a righteous son and that he deserved the blessings? Well, the Sfasemis points out, and the Ksav HaKabbalah, many, many point out that that was not the case at all. At all! He was never duped in the first place. How do we know this? Because when Esav comes to Yitzchak and he says, do you have any bracha? HaBracha achas hilcha avi? Do you have a single bracha for me? What does Yitzchak say? Sorry, son, all out. And that's not true. Because at the end of the parsha, when Yaakov is about to leave, what does Yitzchak say to him?
It's the birchas Avraham.
Yes, v'yitein lecha es birchas Avraham. He does have another blessing. He has the blessing of the future generation of the covenant with the land of Israel? He's got another blessing. So what do you mean he says to Esav, I have no more blessings?
It's not his, it's
a lot. Oh, and who is it supposed to go to?
That's Yaakov.
To Yaakov. Esav was not fooled. Yitzchak was not fooled. Mm-hmm. He knew all along that Birchas Avraham is going to Yaakov. Mm-hmm. What was the discussion? The discussion was, Yitzchak thought we can have a shutfus. We can have a partnership. And you know what it's like? They say in Chazal, the partnership between Yisachar and Zevulun. He figures, I'm going to give, you know, the Pesukim, V'yitin l'cha ha'lokim ital ha'shamayim b'shamani ha'aretz. I'll give you the economy. You'll have the fat of the land. I'll give that to Esav. And he and Yaakov will work it out. Yaakov will develop the world spiritually. Esav will partner with him to cultivate the world physically. And it'll be a great enterprise. So Rivka comes along and she says, look, and this is what the Ksav HaKabbalah says. She says, I love you, my husband Yitzchak, but I don't agree with you. Because I believe that Esav has gone off the deep end, so to speak, and he's not, I don't want to say he's not capable, because everyone has Bechira Chavshis, but he has demonstrated that he is not up to the challenge to actually work together with Yaakov. And you don't see that. That's what you don't see, Yitzchak. You are fooled to the extent that you think that they can really work together. And Rivka says, I know that they can't work together. Whether she knows that because she grew up in the house of Lavan, and she knows the kind of antics that people can employ, or she knows that because of Ruach HaKodesh, or she knows it because she just saw them in the house, and she wasn't blind, Yitzchak was blind. Whatever it was, Rivka knew that this is the Mahalach. So now the question becomes, well, what should she do? So instead of hurting Yitzchak's feelings, instead of having the whole thing come crashing down on his head, she figures, let's just kind of try to move it around, and that's what she did. So now, there's a if he hadn't found earlier sources, and if he hadn't said it, I wouldn't even bring it to the table. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, the former chief rabbi of the Commonwealth, he writes in the Dvar Torah that I found 2 weeks ago in Parashas Toldos, he says in a certain sense his feeling is that Rivka made a mistake and that she shouldn't have gone about this whole ruse. But whether or not she made a mistake or not, it's a good question, and one could make the suggestion that she did not make a mistake. She made the right decision. Nonetheless, that decision has consequences. Because what that decision says is that Esav, there's no hope for you. You are not redeemed. There's no role for you to play anymore. Because both the spiritual heritage and the physical heritage, they're all going to Yaakov Avinu. So Esav, you're out of luck. There's no role for you to play, to cultivate the physical, to partner. And by saying that, by making that chaticha, by saying that it's over, there's a consequence to that.
But wasn't that in the Nevuah when she was pregnant? She was told that the older will serve the younger, and they both cannot exist at the same point.
Oh, so that's a great question. So Rabbi Sachs actually addresses that because the pasuk just says "V'rav ya'avod tsair." So grammatically, it's not clear what the word "V'rav ya'avod tsair" means. It's hard to translate. The literal translation is Varav, the older, the bigger, the greater. Ya'avod, he will work, he will serve. Tsair, the younger. So who is that modifying? Is that modifying that the Varav, the major, the master, Ya'avod Tsair, the younger one should serve him? Or no, Varav Ya'avod Tsair, the older one will serve the younger one. So Rabbi Sachs suggests that the ambiguity in that text lends itself to different interpretations. And Rivka interpreted in one way, but it could be it would have interpreted differently. So, this question about whether or not it was on their level of great spiritual achievement that we have no idea even how to measure, whether that was an error, so to speak, or not, is a separate question from the fact that the bottom line is that choice had a consequence. Because that said, no, there's no role for you anymore. So for that reason, Esav has a tzaaka. He has a scream. The scream is the scream of a person who's just been told that you have no tachlis, you have no chibur, you have no connection, you're gone. And the Rabbeinu Shlomo, according to the Medrash, what does the Medrash say? He's going to get repaid for that. You know why? Because b'tzedek. Perhaps in reality, even if Yaakovinu and Rivka were correct, at the end of the day, it's not right. How could Esav Taka lose out? How could he be unredeemable? It's not right. Now I understand why it is that Yaakov Avinu, according to that first Medrash in Vayetze, is considered a rotzeach b'shogeg, a negligence, a murder, you know, what do they call that, an illegal, it's not, manslaughter. Why is he considered the perpetrator of manslaughter? Because even though he had the proper kavana, even though he was doing it on the encouragement of his mother, there still was a consequence. There still was an impact on somebody else. And Yaakov Avinu, perhaps you even see it in the story, he knew that. He knew that there was something here that's got, you know, it schmecks. It schmecks funny. It smells funny over here. Because he knows that by doing this, he's totally cutting him off. He does it because that's what the decision has to be made. That's what Rivka tells him to do. And she said that Beruach HaKodesh. But there's still an element. So now I understand why it's called Rotzeach B'Shogeg. It's not his fault, but there's a consequence. Somebody's got to pay that price. Now I can understand something really unbelievable. If you look on page 6, there is an astonishing Gemara based on this. The Pasuk says, it's actually the shortest Pasuk in the Chumash, V'achos lo tan timna. There are a couple of Pasukim in the Torah where you only have three words. Achos lo tan timna, mayhi, what's this all about? So the Midrash tells you, listen to this story. Timna, this woman, her name is Timna, bas melachem havoi, she was the daughter of kings. Dechsiv, as it says, aluf lo tan, aluf timna. V'chol aluf, and every aluf is malchusa below tagahi. It's actually a king without a crown. I guess we would translate that like a lord, like a feudal lord. A very respectable aristocracy. Boy li'igayure. She, Timna, this woman, wants to convert. Basa etzel Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. She comes to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. V'lo kibluha. And what happened? They did not accept her. Holcha v'hoisa pilegesh le'elifaz ben Esav. She went and became a concubine of Eliphaz, the daughter of Esav. The son of Esav. Amra, she said, mutav tehe shifcha le'umazu. It's better that I should be a maidservant, a second-class citizen in this people, v'lo tehe gevira l'uma acheris, and not to be a master, a high-class citizen in a different society. Nafak mina, who was her child? Amalek. Why? Did sa'arinu li'Yisrael, that bothered the Jewish people, my time, a why? Delo ibaye luhu larachaka. It was not proper that they pushed her away.
Why did they do it?
She was according to Rashi, she was a mamzeres.
So we don't know. We don't know exactly why. We don't know. We don't know why they didn't accept her as a convert. We don't know. The Gemara doesn't tell you. Rashi here does not tell you.
Rashi in this parsha shows that she was a mamzeres.
Right, but why can't they convert her?
Well, so who can you marry if you're a mamzeres? Well, you can't be a Bnei Yisrael. Well,
so Rashi here says, though, that the issue was that they didn't convert her. So what do you learn from this story? Perhaps Again, if Chazal didn't say it, who am I to say it? But Chazal are saying that here is someone who comes along who has the potential to be redeemed, to be brought tachas kanfei Hashchina, and they are rejected. And then what happens when they are rejected? Exactly. They go to the complete opposite extreme. And this is the idea that is explained in Maharal, that it's one thing if I never had like a connection to you, if I never met you, so I'm not going to be considered, let's say the two of us, we're not going to be polar opposites, because I never encountered you. So if I never encountered you, I can't be. But if I came close to you and then I was rejected, now I'm catapulted away in the complete opposite direction. If I'm Malik, had never had that opportunity to encounter the Jewish people, so they would have said, you know, Akamola can't be the arch nemesis. But no, it's because they had that connection and then it was sent totally to the opposite extreme. And what the Maharal explains on this like deep mystical spiritual level is true also just on a basic emotional level. The feeling of being rejected, of being estranged, that's going to create a tremendous amount of bitterness. And even think about what he was. He wasn't the son of Esav's wife. He was the son of Esav's Pelegesh, concubine. So now here's a kid growing up. He has five brothers who are all alufim. They're all lords. They're all the sons. They're all going to inherit. They're all followers, and
he's
this
a second class citizen.
Exactly. How's he going to feel? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to, this is not, you know, we don't psychoanalyze Torah figures, but think about it. People talk about this, you know, from a psychological standpoint. Someone like this who feels completely rejected, and so of course he's going to generate a certain amount of cynicism and bitterness. But that could have been avoided. It could have been avoided if Timna had been welcomed. And this Gemara fits now in an incredibly astonishing way with a pasuk about Esav. Because at the beginning, we always like to think of Esav, like we said, as the Rasha, as the arch enemy. But you know what the pasuk says about Esav? He's my brother. We never think about Esav as a brother. But you know what the pasuk does? You want to talk about where you're going to, who's going to be Mizgayer, who's going to convert? So look at the last page, on page 8, 7, excuse me. The Pasuk says, in Parshas Kisetze, regarding people who want to convert. It says, Lo sesaev Adomi, do not totally reject an Edomite. Ki achichahu, because he is your brother. Look at that. And Rashi says, Lo sesaev adomi legamri. Don't completely spurn him. Va'af al pisha roi l'chol esavo. Even though there's good reason for you to hate him. She yotza becherev l'krasecha. He came out to fight you when you were going back. He wouldn't let you pass in his land. It doesn't matter. He is ki achichahu. And therefore his descendants are able to convert. So what is this story? This is, in a certain sense, perhaps, so to speak, closing the loop. It says, yes, maybe Esau maybe had been a Rasha, maybe Timna was this estranged woman who wasn't, you know, Mio de Ama. But if they come to convert...
But Amalek can't convert.
That's a good question, if Amalek can convert or not. It's a good question. Because the Pasuk doesn't mention anything about whether or not an Amaleki can convert.
Wasn't it Amaleki who came to tell Shaul what
exactly happened? So that's part of the story. It's the Amaleki came to tell David HaMelech that Shaul had died, and David executed the Amaleki. So it's not clear from the Mefarshim whether or not he executed the Amaleki because he was an Amaleki, or because he was the responsible for the murder of the Mashiach Hashem. So that's part of the discussion over there about when do you kill an Amaleki, who's responsible to kill him, you know, can he convert? There's a discussion, I think even the Rambam, if I'm not mistaken, weighs in on this question about whether an Amaleki can convert. But the point is that before it got to the level of Amalek, maybe Amalek is the Shorash Hara, you know, we say, Timcha Ezech Amalek Mitachas HaShamayim, destroy Amalek from beneath the heavens. What about above the heavens? So some say, yeah, above the heavens in the Olam Emes, every Ra has a Shorash of Tov, every evil has some kernel of good that can be redeemed. But maybe we never even need to get to Amalek. And this is what I leave as this kind of open question. that yes, we do view Esav as the quintessential Rasha. But perhaps what Chazal are trying to show us, and this is where it comes back to the story with Dina, is that maybe it's not so simple. Maybe... destroy Amalek, but that's what I'm saying. Don't forget it, 100%. But I'm pointing out two things. Number one, it says mitachas hashamayim, under the heavens. Maybe above the heavens there is some spiritual source that they have life. And number two, maybe we never had to get to the level of Amalek in the first place. Because perhaps if Yaakov Avinu, on some level, according to Chazal, had been able to work it out with Esav, then they wouldn't have hated us. Then there wouldn't have been this rivalry. There wouldn't have been this hatred. And maybe, had according to Chazal, had Timnah been accepted by Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, she wouldn't have gone to marry Eliphaz. We wouldn't have had Amalek either in the first place. So, I'm not suggesting that everybody should find a local Esav and marry off their daughter to a local Esav. But I think what Chazal are trying to teach us is a lesson. And that is that, on the one hand, yes, sometimes when you encounter Ra, it's Ra. And there's no redemptive quality to it. On the other hand, what they're trying to say is sometimes, and it's pretty shocking, at least to me it was pretty shocking, sometimes even what you think is mamish ra, you think you see Esav, you see 100% ra, there's something there. There's the potential for something good. There's the potential to find a place for him to work together. And that's a great challenge. Practically, how to do that? I don't know, you have to ask a chacham who's a great pikeach, and you see that even Rivka, who had Ruach HaKodesh, there was some fallout, the Za'aka Gedola. But the idea is that it kind of puts Esav in a different light, not the character who is completely Ra, but the character who was unrefined and unredeemed, but perhaps wasn't given enough tools. Maybe, obviously, he's responsible for his own actions. He's going to be destroyed according to the Nevi'im because of his Bechira Chavshis. But maybe there was some place, if somebody else would have given him a lifeline from a spiritual vantage point, there could have been some redemption for him.
Why didn't Hashem let Leah marry?
So in Achanami, that could be part of the problem. Part of the problem is and this is I think Rabbi Sachs alludes to this, is that the golos of Yaakov having to go to Haran was caused by this issue with Esav. Had Yaakov not been in that exile, maybe it would have turned out differently. Maybe, in fact, Esav would have married Leah and Yaakov would have married Rachel. Maybe that's gufa, that's exactly the point.